Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to a new installment of the Wide Ride Podcast. I'm your host, Manny Navarro, Miami Hurricanes beat writer for The Athletic. It is Tuesday, July 12th, right around 10 a.m., just a couple hours away before Raul Aguirre, a four-star linebacker out of Georgia, makes an announcement. We think he's going to end up picking the Miami Hurricanes, which would only boost Mario Cristobal's recruiting class even more, especially a big, important position of need like linebacker. Miami's been trying to get some good ones. So we'll preview that. We'll discuss recruiting and just the entire whirlwind of what it's been like here the last few weeks where Miami's picked up all of these commitments. And we're going to get into talking a little about South Florida Express, which you guys have known. I've talked about this on the podcast before. I spent some time with them this year following them out to California and then Las Vegas, which brings me to my new co-host today. That would be Andrew Ferrelli. Andrew has been with SFE since around 2014, but you know, he originally went to Florida State. Always been a Miami fan, a Miami guy through and through. Even though he went to FSU, and you know, he actually started out on this side of the business, which is, you know, being a journalist and trying to you know, report on it and so forth. Andrew, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much for having me, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. You know, I love the fact that, you know, you've been around this for so long in terms of just the recruiting game. And you know, you're not one of these young guys who's just starting out. You have a little bit of experience. You've been around the block quite a bit. And that's why I think you're a great voice to add to the Wide Right podcast here, because, you know, you know these kids, you know their tendencies a little bit, and you can really provide some great perspective on recruiting and the way the game is now. I guess let's start with this, first of all. I mean, I kind of gave you a little brief introduction, but tell the listeners here of Wide Right a little bit more about yourself and why it is that, you know, you do the thing with SFE and why you love this so much.
So I've kind of just always grown up around the sport. Growing up, you know, played football, watched football, loved football. My dad was a high school football referee, so I'd always, you know, from the time I was 5, 6, 7 years old, I would be on the sidelines with him as the ball boy or whatever the case was. And that kind of started me getting into like the recruiting rankings and everything like that. I'd look up like the big players that he had in his game that night, that kind of thing. And just from there, it continued to grow. When I was in high school, I started writing for a website called Kane's Warning. It's probably around 2014. And just through that, that got me involved with SFE. They had a ton of big players at the time, like Devin Bush, Cedric Wright, Deontay Mullins, Sam Bruce, a whole bunch of guys that have, Jordan Scarlett, you know, a whole bunch of guys that have come through that program were all involved at that time. So I started spending a lot of time at their practices and stuff like that, just on the journalism side, covering them, you know, covering their recruitments, just things that were going on and in high school football that time. And just being around practices all the time, pretty much every weekend being out there, just started to help out with little things here and there, whatever they needed. And, you know, eventually they just kind of brought me on full time, and my role has just kind of, you know, grown since then into handling a lot of the off-field stuff, whether it's, you know, social media, travel, you know, rosters, just all that kind of auxiliary stuff.
Yeah. And you know, being around you and around Brett Getz and so many of the guys involved with SFE, you know, you guys do this because you love it, right? I mean, it's a passion. It's kind of like you just enjoy the competition. And of course, you got great players around you. So the team does well. They win championships like you guys did last month over there in Las Vegas at the overtime. I'm actually writing a story about the overtime tournament. I'm hoping that the article that I've been trying to write here for a couple months on South Florida Express finally comes out. So that'll be things to tease to here in The Athletic in the weeks to come. But I want to ask you a little bit more about these athletes. You know, people, I don't think, really understand what these kids kind of go through in the recruiting process. And you're with the South Florida Express. You're around great guys like Brandon Innes and Carnell Tate and, you know, just so many guys, Cormani McLean. I'm looking at the roster right here, you know, from last month. Lamar Seymour, who just committed to Pittsburgh yesterday, the former Hurricanes commitment. You know, JoJo Trader, the five-star who's everybody's going to be on next year, along with Jeremiah Smith, another big-time kid, 2024 kid. What's it like from your view of what these kids, when they go through the recruiting process, how much do they agonize over this? How much do they enjoy this? How much of this is, in your estimation, like a really, really tough decision for them? Do they toy with the public sometimes? I mean, it's kind of like you have a unique behind the scenes view. If you had to describe what it's like being back there, watching these kids go on these trips, compete in these tournaments, talk about colleges, what's your biggest takeaway about what really goes on versus the public perception?
I mean, I think a lot of it depends on the kid. Mm-hmm. Some of them enjoy it. Some of them, you know, it's just a lot of attention that they don't want. I think publicly, you know, everyone sees the visits. They see the big 7-on-7 tournaments traveling around the country. They see, you know, flying out for official visits at all these schools and, you know, the way they get treated there. So I think publicly, you know, you kind of see all the positives about it, but you don't get to see all the behind the scenes of how tough of a decision it actually is, how much attention that they're getting, how much, you know, they're constantly having reporters call them, text them. I mean, it's a pain to try to get in touch with some of these kids sometimes because they all have their phone on do not disturb because their phones are constantly getting blown up by coaches, reporters, you know, whoever it is, just trying to get in touch with them, trying to ask them, you know, all these different questions, you know, on top of making it, you know, probably the biggest decision up to their life, you know, up to this point in their life. So I think publicly everyone, you know, sees the positives of it. They see, like I said, these, you know, official visit trips where they're, you know, getting all the big meals and having dinner on South Beach at Miami and this and that. But it really is an agonizing process for them. I mean, some of these kids, it's from the time they're in eighth, ninth grade that they're constantly being, you know, asked questions by coaches, reporters, you know, having to start thinking of all these things that are going to impact their decision. And that's why, like, a lot of the times when we're together with them, it's not even something that we really talk about. Like, we talk, you know, football and what's going on with 7-on-7. We just talk about life, talk about school. Just because by the time they get into that kind of setting, you know, it's something that they don't even want to discuss that much at that point. So I think from the outside looking at it, yeah, you're seeing these kids, you know, getting treated, you know, having 10 million fan bases tweet at them about how much they love them, having, you know, coaches tell them how much they love them, getting flown out and all this stuff. But behind the scenes, it is a tough process for them. And like I said, it's, you know, a decision that's going to affect the rest of their life. So it's definitely more than meets the eye. It's a really stressful process. And it's definitely not the, you know, the easiest decision that they're going to have to make.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think sometimes what people don't realize too is all those messages on Twitter, right? Like the fan bases who get left out or the school that doesn't get picked. I mean, some of these people are really mean. It's not just Miami people who are negative.
Oh, no, it's fan bases all over the country. Yeah. Some of the stuff that gets sent to these kids, especially when they commit to other schools, is absolutely insane. People saying stuff about them, their families, all this stuff. Some of these fans just are crazy. So a lot of them, I mean, you know, they just try to block it out as much as they can. But yeah, it definitely, you know, takes a toll on them somewhat.
Yeah, I think again, your perspective being around them, having a behind the scenes look, I think is so unique. And I appreciate you coming on to talk to us about all this stuff. And hopefully we get you on regularly here. But let's talk a little bit more about this recruiting class, because I know you are a Miami fan. So obviously this things have been going well for the Canes here. Mario has really come in. And in my opinion, I mean, I'm a little surprised, to be honest with you. I didn't think that he was going to get these many commitments right away, you know, and obviously we still have a long way to go until December when these guys have to sign on the dotted line and Miami's got to win and all those other kind of things. And kids could flip. There could be situations here where guys decide to look elsewhere. But what you know, right now, Miami's class is ranked 10th in the 247 sports composite. If they add Raul Aguirre today, I think they're going to jump up to sixth. What sort of grabbed you here early on about the Mario era, knowing, you know, you've been around for Mark Richt and Al Golden and other coaches? What's grabbed you the most here?
Just to touch on like one of the earlier things you said about how, you know, just how well this class is already coming together in 2023. I was kind of in the same boat. I thought 24 was going to be like the main class that, you know, give them kind of a year to build these relationships and stuff like that. And really hammer home 24. I thought 23 would be a good class, but I definitely wasn't expecting this kind of success right off the bat, talking about, you know, top 10, potentially even top five, top three within the next couple of weeks. And I think just the biggest difference is the effort on the recruiting trail. I mean, these coaches, this entire staff is just nonstop from the time they wake up. I mean, Mario's texting recruits at 4:30 in the morning, waking up to go to the gym or do whatever he's doing, all the way to the time he goes to sleep late at night. Even kids that aren't even considering them. I've seen kids that are, you know, committed out of state that were never even really considering Miami, had top threes that didn't even include Miami, and the Miami staff is still checking in on them every single day. So I think just that effort and that relentlessness that they kind of put into it is really showing. And I think just the way Mario is able to build relationships with the schools and the locations around him is just incredible. I think that's definitely one of his strengths as a recruiter. And I think that's what we're seeing. You know, right now you look at this recruiting class, the top four or five guys in this class right now are all West Coast guys. And this is, you know, going on 8 months after he's left over there. So I think that just goes to show how strong of a bond and how good he is at building relationships with some of the local schools and local coaches and stuff like that. And I think definitely as he continues to have more time down here and builds that bond with the local guys down here again, and gets the South Florida guys to fully jump on ship, like you're seeing with these West Coast guys, I think that's when things are really going to get crazy, especially in that 24 class. You put that relentlessness and that effort that he puts into recruiting along with the relationships that he's going to be able to build down here, and then still have the ability to you know, pluck elite guys from around the country. I think that's really going to make his recruiting classes down here continue to be special going forward.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. And you know, I talked to Mario, I want to say right around the end of May, beginning of June, right before the visit, you know, the OV period began. And, you know, we talked about that, about being on the West Coast, you know, for the last 5 years. And he was honest. He said, listen, I'm busting my ass right now trying to reestablish these relationships with the guys on the East Coast, because I really wasn't recruiting this area. Right. I mean, they would come in and maybe pick a guy or two, you know, from the state of Florida and bring him out to Oregon. But the reality is he was investing all of his time and energy into California, which is where he built all these relationships with a lot of these kids, you know, Arizona, Utah, which is why he's got guys from the West Coast, because he's been recruiting them since they were eighth and ninth graders. And I know some people say, well, this is all NIL, right? This is all John Ruiz. He's spending a boatload of money on NIL, and these kids are only signing with Miami or committing to Miami because the NIL deals. I was on Channel 7 on Sports Extra Sunday night, and we talked about this. I don't know if it ended up making the show or not, because we talked for about 10 minutes. And I think they only put 3.5 on the air. But, you know, part of my conversation with them was, you know, they want to know how much credit does Ruiz deserve. I think Mario deserves the crux of it, because what Ruiz does is he puts Miami in the ballgame when it comes to NIL, right? Like he puts them on par with Alabama, with Ohio State, with USC, with Texas, with all these schools that have NIL. But in the end, Mario still has to convince these kids Miami's the best place to go if money is equal. And that's a credit to him and the fact that he's such a relentless recruiter and hired a great staff, that I think that played as big a role as any is why Miami's getting these guys.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you look at some of these elite guys that they're getting, whether it's, you know, Francis Malagoa, Jada Wade, Jada Rashada, Riley Williams, you know, all these guys had top threes, top fives with schools like Tennessee, Texas A&M, Alabama, Ohio State, you know, Florida, all these schools that are, you know, willing to put, you know, similar money up for these types of players. So I think once you get into that, you know, five-star elite guy, You know, NIL does only so much. Like you said, it gets you in the ballpark, but those other schools that are, you know, having similar deals out there. But it really comes down to the coaching staff just being able to hammer it home and show them, hey, you know, you can get paid here, you can get paid there, you can get paid wherever. But this is still going to be the best place to set you up, you know, for these next 3 to 4 years and continuing it on, you know, hopefully into the NFL. So I think NIL, like you said, kind of, you know, gets you in that conversation with them. But at the end of the day, it's still about the coaching staff, you know, convincing that player as to why this is the best place for them.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, especially in Miami's case, you know, where they look, the NIL thing, it's been going on since last year, like De'Aaron King, there were other guys getting paid, getting deals, you know, before Mario got here. And that was helping keep some kids here before Ruiz really got into it. You know, Miami, some of their players are getting an NIL deal. So it's not just a Ruiz thing. I think ultimately Mario's relationships are the key to this whole thing. When you look at the commitments right now, the 13 guys or the 12 guys that they've got, I guess they'll have 13 after Aguirre commits or whatever. But when you look at the class right now, who stands out to you the most? You've seen some of these guys play in person. Other ones, I think you've watched on film. You know, I know what the recruiting rankings say, what they are, 5-star, 4-star, but who's maybe a little underrated, who's a little overrated in your mind?
I think underrated, I'd probably go Jaden Rashada. I really, really like him. He's one of the very few quarterbacks that I've seen pick apart the SFP secondary that's loaded with 4- and 5-star guys. Yeah. I mean, we did not lose many tournaments, and one of the ones that we did was to him out in Los Angeles. His ball placement, his arm strength, just everything about him is really impressive. Right now they have him, I think the composite for 247 has him as like the number 7 quarterback in the country. I think he's definitely top 3 or 4. I think, you know, Nico's Yamalavea is probably ahead of him. And then I think after that, I think there's probably, you know, 3 or 4 quarterbacks between Malachi Nelson, Rashada, you know, they can probably put in that next group. So I think he definitely has an argument to be a top 3 quarterback in this class. So I think having him down at 7 is a little bit low. And I mean, his composite nationally is down to 45 because On3 has him ranked as like 155th or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. Or else he would definitely be a 5-star in this class as well. So I think he's a little underrated. I think I'm a little biased just because I see Ray Ray, fairly often with SFE, but I think he's also underrated. Nathaniel Joseph. He's definitely one of the most explosive kids I've ever seen. He's just a matchup nightmare. And then for as fast as he is, he's strong too. Like if you look at him, like he's well built. He's got a good center of gravity. He's not someone that just can, you know, run by you. Once he gets the ball in his hands, he's tough to bring down. I think he's by far the best slot receiver in the country.
Yeah, I like Ray Ray a lot as well. Watching him in out in LA with you guys, I thought, you know, the middle of the field is where teams win now, right? I mean, mm-hmm. on the outside, you're going to see big corners, big safeties try to take away the outside. But I think Ray Ray in the middle is so dangerous. And I know you guys had Breshard Smith, who's with Miami now mm-hmm. as a second-year sophomore. Can you compare the two of them? How are they similar? How are they different? Because I think they're very similar in stature, right? Height, weight, etc. But where are they better, worse, etc.?
Yeah, they're. I mean, they're very similar in stature. I think Ray Ray's top end speed might be a little bit better, and I think his ability to just start and stop on a dime is insane. Breshard is super shifty too in the open field, but I've never seen anyone just be able to stop and then get back up to top speed like Ray Ray does. I mean, it's 7-on-7. It's you know, one hand touch, and people struggle to get a touch on him. I think Breshard might be a little more polished from like a route running aspect. But I think Nathaniel definitely has a little bit more speed and stop and start ability.
Yeah. I think they're both going to be really good players at Miami. I know Breshard had his explosive moments, including that long touchdown catch against Virginia Tech. And, I would think that, you know, Ray Ray is going to come in and make a similar, impact potentially even on special teams, returning kicks, punts, etc. I mean, just such an explosive, young man. Let's talk a little bit more about receiver, because this week, Miami, I mean, yes, when we'll get to Jaden Wayne and some of these other guys in a minute, but, you know, Miami struck out with Jaylen Brown, the five-star receiver from Miami Gulliver Prep. I know he didn't play for you guys. He was with the Miami Immortals 7-on-17 this year. But knowing Jaylen's father a little bit, his dad was a statistician or is a statistician for Miami Heat game. So when I covered the Heat for many years, I would hear from his dad, hey, my son's coming up the ranks. He's going to be a good player. You got to watch out for him, et cetera. But Jaylen, you know, he was a guy that I heard last year was wanting to get away from South Florida for college. And that's something that I think, Andrew, you and I have talked about in the past. A lot of the kids here in South Florida, whether Mario here is here or not, they want to go out and see the rest of the country. They want to go out and kind of be wooed by a lot of other universities. And ultimately, Jaylen, when he picked LSU this week over Miami, or last week rather, you know, he talked about wanting to get away. I guess in your thoughts on Jaylen Brown and how big of a loss that is for Miami. And ultimately, I would add this as well, as giving a little perspective. And there's a lot of great wide receivers here in South Florida. We've already talked about Ray Ray being, you know, one of those commitments. Robbie Washington, who also plays for the Immortal, you know, a four-star slot guy. But when it comes to Jaylen, how big of a loss is that in your mind?
I mean, I think Jaylen's speed is something that, you know, obviously any team wants to have. I think he, you know, he's definitely has to add some weight, get a little more physical. It'll come naturally just getting into college. But just his speed is a big loss. You know, obviously, like I said, any team wants that kind of guy, that sub 10, 600 meter guy, that has some good height, you know, can really open up things, take the top off the defense. So I think, you know, it's a loss in that sense, but, I mean, if there was a position where you can afford to lose someone, this year, I think it's South Florida. I mean, sorry, I think it's wide receivers in South Florida. There's 4, 5, 6 guys that are really, really good down here at receiver. So I think if you can, you know, go ahead and get someone like an Andy Jean or William Fowles or, you know, obviously Hakeem Williams, I think if you land 2 or 3 of those guys, it kind of helps negate that loss. But obviously, you know, you never want to see a five-star kid from down here go elsewhere, even if they are, you know, kind of set on leaving the state. So I think it is a loss in that sense and just, you know, losing out on that speed, because I know that's something that Mario really wants to, you know, increase, especially in the wide receiver room, is just that overall speed. But I think if you can go out there and land, you know, a Hakeem Williams or an Andy Jean and William Fowles, that kind of will help to negate that loss.
Yeah. And Hakeem is somebody that I think they've turned the heat up on here the last couple of weeks. You know, you obviously Hakeem played with you guys. He wasn't out in Vegas, but he played with you throughout the year. You know, 6'4" probably is what his height is now. Is he 6'5" yet? I mean, he seems like he's getting bigger every time I see him.
Yeah.
Big physical guy. Reminds me a little bit of Andre Johnson when Andre Johnson was at Miami.
Yeah. I mean, I think Hakeem may have the highest ceiling of anyone in this class. I mean, he's, and not just talking about guys that Miami's recruiting, just any receiver in general. I mean, he's far from a finished product. He's, you know, a basketball player that's still kind of transitioning over to the wide receiver position. But I mean, you're talking about a kid that's 6'4", 205, 210. I think it was the underclassmen report tracked him as having like the second highest speed of anyone in the 23 class. He hit over 22 miles an hour at that size. And just his speed and size is just incredible. I think it definitely gives him the, you know, one of the highest ceilings, if not the highest ceiling of any receiver in this 2023 class. And like you said, Miami's definitely turned the heat up on him lately. Not sure if it's just trying to take advantage of this momentum that they've had over the last couple weeks, or a part of that with Jaylen Brown leaving, you know, just kind of pivoting. But I do think that he is someone that they've definitely turned their attention to. And I think he's listening from everything I've heard. It seems like they're definitely back in it with him. So we'll see what happens there. I think they're definitely, you know, setting themselves up to, you know, hopefully be in a good position with him going forward. But I think that just he's, you know, he's still raw. He needs a lot of work still. Like I said, he's still kind of transitioning over to football. But I think just physically, he may have the highest ceiling of anyone in this class. I know when he met with Nick Saban literally told him, hey, you can come here and be my next Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. Like he has that kind of potential physically.
And watching Hakeem, you know, and all the guys in the South Florida Express again, I mean, this receiver list is just ridiculous. I mean, Brandon Innes, 5-star headed to Ohio State, Parnell Tate, 4-star headed to Ohio State. We talked about Ray Ray earlier. He's going to Miami. JoJo Trader and Jeremiah Smith, the two, you know, 2 5-stars in the in the 24 class. Lamar Seymour, who committed to Pittsburgh, he had Santana. Fleming was another guy that, that ran with you guys. I mean, so many great receivers, great hands. I want to ask, I'm going to put you on the spot. If you had to pick best overall receiver of all the guys you had in SFE, who would you put number one?
Oh, that's tough. Cause they're all so different.
Yeah.
Overall going forward, I think it might be Jeremiah Smith in the 24 class. I think he has the ability to be possibly the best wide receiver recruit we've seen in, you know, the last 5-10 years. He's 6'3", 6'4", still growing. Has speed, has, you know, great route running, great hands. I think he may end up being the most complete receiver recruit that we've seen, you know, not only in South Florida, but just across the country in a while. For the 23 class, that's tough because, you know, between Brandon, Carnell, Hakeem, they're all very different. I think Brandon might be the most college ready right now. Mm-hmm. I think that honestly may be the only knock on him is that his, you know, how much better can he get because he's already such a complete receiver. He already, you know, just mentally understands the game so well. And then Carnell is, as well as just, you know, he's another kid that's 6'2", can run, has great hands. And then again, I think Hakeem has the highest ceiling of that 23 class. So if you put me on the spot and said, you know, hey, 3-4 years from now, who's the best receiver out of all these guys? I think I'm going to have to lean to the young guy and give Jeremiah Smith that edge.
Yeah. And it's funny because I know you're not the only one who feels this way. I mean, talking to Brett and some of the other guys in the staff, they feel like the ceiling for Jeremiah, for his future is through the roof, but so many of them are so good. I mean, I kind of compare Brandon to a Jarvis Landry in my mind, just because his hands are so steady, so consistent in the middle of the field. It's a good problem to have. It was fun watching you guys play this year because there was so much talent out there. Probably one of the best offensive units you guys have ever had, right? I mean, at least in the years that you've been involved.
Oh yeah, I definitely say it's definitely one of the strongest offenses we've ever had. I mean, like you said, you read off the names of the receivers, whether it was you know Carnell, Brandon Ennis, Jeremiah Smith, JoJo Trader. That's 4 or 5 stars right there. And then you have, you know, Ray Joseph, who we end up just putting at running back a lot because, you know, we had so much talent on the outside. You put him at running back and you match him up in a linebacker. It's not even fair watching a linebacker try to stay with him at that point. And then you have, guys like Lamar Seymour, who's may have the strongest hands of anyone I've seen in this class. He does not drop anything. I think he's going to be, you know, a really good receiver at Pitt. So just the talent offensively in this class was, you know, for SFE was absolutely insane.
All right. Let's transition a little bit here to a story that I think everybody was talking about this week. And that was Jaden Wayne's commitment to Miami on Saturday. And, you know, at the time, I put it in my headline because it was true. It was a fact. He was the second 5-star to pick Miami, right? After Francis Mauigoa. An hour later, he drops from a 5-star in the 247 Sports composite to a 4-star. And this is something that if you're interested in getting the explanation from the guys at 247, I know Gabby Urrutia and David Lake, two guys that I respect quite a bit in this business. They definitely work hard covering the Canes for 247. They did an entire podcast talking about it and sort of explaining their side of the story. But I will tell you, Andrew, and you and I have followed this for a long time, as we've already established, the perception of Miami recruits dropping in the recruiting rankings after committing to Miami. I mean, that's something that everybody has always talked about for a long time. What is your take on this? And what, you know, behind the scenes, what are players sort of saying about that?
I mean, just on the Jaden Wayne situation, obviously it's unfortunate, you know, like 247 explained it, I guess, between him transferring, it kind of, you know, changes things with the profiles and then them adding on 3 recently. It seems like it was just kind of a perfect storm to cause some sort of tech issue there with the, I guess, them not factoring the on 3 rankings in. And then, you know, it's unfortunate that they happened to notice it on his commitment day and probably not the best timing for them to go ahead and get that inputted and changed. you know, obviously, like you said, Gabby and David, like, do great work with 247. If you listen to their podcast about it, it seems like they were, you know, just as blindsided by it as anyone. And, you know, if not as upset, probably more upset than any of the fans, because, you know, everything that they did was all about him being a five-star too. You know, you look at the graphic that 247 tweeted out, it has him as a five-star on there as well. So, I mean, that situation is just, you know, unfortunate. You know, for Jaden, obviously kind of overshadowed his, you know, commitment as well. So definitely not the best timing by, you know, whoever was behind the scenes there and noticed that that wasn't factored in. You know, all around, it's just not the best situation. And then it is kind of the perfect storm with, you know, Miami fans always kind of feeling like, you know, they get a little bit slighted in the rankings when a kid commits to them. I know Miami, you know, the Miami fan base isn't the only fan base that thinks that way. It seems, you know, there's a lot of them that feel that way. But for it to happen, you know, an hour after he commits, it's definitely the perfect storm and kind of makes all those conspiracy theories definitely, you know, feel a little bit more true. You know, obviously given the explanation they gave, it wasn't something necessarily that they changed. They still have him as, you know, I think a top 30 or 35 player in the country. They just, whatever their system is that puts Taylor the composite, hadn't factored in on three having him all the way down at 93rd or 96th, whatever it was.
Right.
So we'll see. I mean, it is an unfortunate situation, like I said, but, you know, it seems at least like it, you know, from their explanation, it was just a tech issue. It wasn't anything malicious. They seem to be, you know, just upset as, you know, by the timing and everything like that it happened as anyone.
Well, you mentioned conspiracy theories, and I have a lot of data here. I did my homework, by the way. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to say some stuff here in a few minutes, but I want to get, before we jump into some numbers here that I have, as far as guys dropping in the rankings after they commit to Miami, because I did look at last year's class. Mm-hmm. And all the four stars and all the guys that the blue chips that Miami signed, to see what happened, right? Did they slip in the rankings? I did my homework because 247 does have a tracking system. But my question to you is, you're around the kids. How much do these rankings mean to them? Because I was in a room with Malik Muhammad out there in Vegas with you guys the first day I arrived. And Malik Muhammad's one of the top cornerbacks in the country. Okay. He is, to me, he's a five-star kid, but he's listed as a four-star. And the first thing he tells Brett Getz when we knock on his door, him and Carnell Tate are rooming together. We walk in there is, hey, Coach Getz, how are you going to get me to be a five-star? Like this matters to them, right? I mean, this is all these rankings. I mean, this fuels them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you'll hear a lot of kids say, oh, I don't pay attention to that, or I don't, you know, look into that, but yeah, they all look into it. And by the way, I think Malik Muhammad should be a five-star. He is, from what I've seen, he is one of the best corners in the country, if not maybe the best corner. But yeah, they all look at it. You know, they all want to have that five-star ranking. A lot of it, it's, you know, they want to see who's in front of them, and, you know, they're all, oh, hey, I'm better than that guy. Why is he in front of me? Or, you know, we like to joke around a lot with, having Carnell and Brandon. It seems like the two of them bounce back and forth on who's, you know, ranked higher. They're, you know, both top three receivers in the class. They kind of bounced around this year as to who was first, second, third, kind of moving up and down. So they definitely pay attention to it. And then I think it's becoming even a bigger deal with all of the NIL stuff. Mm-hmm. As well. I think, you know, having that five, you know, those five stars next to your name, definitely, you know, boost your, you know, your status, your NIL value, all of that kind of stuff. So I think now more than ever, they continue to pay more attention to that. I mean, you even have some recruiting sites now, with On3 showing, right, you know, the NIL evaluation, you know, valuation of this guy, next to their ranking. So I think now more than ever, it definitely is, you know, continuing to matter more to them. Some guys, I think, honestly, don't care too much about it. But a lot of them do, you know, they see who's ranked ahead of them. They see where they are, you know, kind of in line with anyone. And they do take it seriously. Some of them, they want to, you know, they think, hey, I should be ahead of this guy. They'll even reach out to, you know, to coaches or, you know, writers and stuff like that, and ask about the rankings. And like I said, with the NIL valuations and how that can affect their status, I think it's becoming more important than ever.
It's incredible, really. And you look at, you know, how much of an impact it has. You mentioned the NIL side of it. The reality is the haggling that goes on over these rankings is incredible. And I would say it's not just, you know, from the recruit and player standpoint, but from the schools, like, you know, Miami, Alabama, Georgia, these rankings matter to these assistant coaches because a lot of their contracts are based on how many 4 stars and 5 stars they signed. They get bonuses, et cetera, or, you know, they'll get an extension because they've gotten, you know, commitments from X amount of guys. So to me, the incredible part, having been around this now for over 25 years, is I go back to the beginning when I started in the late 90s, you know, you didn't have 5-star, 4-star, 3-star. You know, it wasn't as sophisticated as it is now, a system in terms of ranking. But it's almost like they've created their own, you know, between Rivals and 247 and now On3. I mean, they create the narrative for all of these stories, like this 5-star and this 4-star and this, like, and it just, it's become sort of this thing that we've just developed that didn't exist before. It's an entire market and it's all meant to create money, to get people to subscribe to these services. And it works, right, Andrew? I mean, are you subscribed to all three of them? Do you follow all three of the websites, or how do you sort of handle this information and digest it all?
Honestly, the one I really follow the closest is 247. I think Gabby and David Lake do a great job with that. That's why that whole situation with Jade and Wayne was a little bit unfortunate, because I know they obviously had nothing to do with it. And I think they do, you know, an incredible job and some super hard work covering UM. So I think I've probably followed that one the closest. But yeah, it is, you know, insane just how much things have changed and how big of a market this has created. And, you know, you like to hear people say, oh, Ed Reed was a 2-star and this and that. But recruiting rankings now and the evaluations and the time that's put into it and how big of a business it is now isn't the same as it is back then. I think, you know, recruiting rankings have continued to become more accurate. It's, you know, it's just crazy over the last, you know, maybe 10, 15 years, how big of a market it started to corner. You know, like you said, coaches look at it. They even have bonuses and deals built in, you know, based on rankings that are on these sites. You have all these fan bases that are, you know, arguing for rankings. You have, you know, you go to any of these football games, any of these 7-on-7 tournaments and stuff. It's all, you know, surrounded by reporters and writers and evaluators from these sites from all over the country. So it is, you know, kind of insane just how big of a business it's turned into. And I think, you know, obviously when that happens, that's when you start to see people saying, oh, you know, it's about money and they may favor this fan base over this fan base to, you know, try to get clicks and stuff like that. But just seeing the growth in it and how more and more websites and stuff like that continue to pop up, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And it was all just created out of nothing, out of thin air, that this star system to get people to, and it's brilliant. Shannon Terry and the guys that created these websites, and the whole concept behind it, kudos to them. They're millionaires now, maybe billionaires after all this creating this.
Yeah, I mean, this market. The one guy's created, you know, he started 247, sold it. Or I'm sorry, created Rivals and sold it, 247 and sold it. And now he's, you know, doing On3 as well. So that's his whole business basically is just, you know, creating these, throwing some stars up there, getting people to talk and subscribe and then selling it. So it's, you know, definitely part of it is just, you know, about getting clicks for that purpose. But, you know, I do think overall that the evaluations have gotten better over time, just because there's so many more people watching these guys live around the country. It's not just, you know, a couple of guys watching some huddle tape for a couple minutes and deciding the rankings like that. You know, they do have people all over the country now watching a lot of these guys live and at camps and at 7-on-7s and such.
Yeah. And my whole thing with this all, and I know a complaint by a lot of former players and, you know, people and, you know, personnel, coaches, whatever, analysts, is that, you know, a lot of the guys who do these rankings never played the sport, or they if they did, they didn't go very far. And my response to those former players and people who complain is, well, this isn't exactly a profession that pays a lot of money, right? Otherwise, I think these athletes would probably move right into this recruiting. Yeah. And it's not very glamorous. So yes, leave it to the nerds. Let the nerds do their thing, right? Let them do their rankings, but also take it for what it is. It's not a perfect system. It's the best that they're trying to do. And in the end, while you can get angry about it, that you, maybe some of your, you know, the players picking your schools aren't, you know, given the respect that you want to be given. Look, it's the science that we have right now, and it's entertaining you because football is, you know, football is year round now because of this, because of recruiting, because of these rankings, you know, and in reality, the season lasts, what, 4 or 5 months at most. So this entertains you for another 7 to 8 months, aside from what happens on the field. All right. So I want to give a little bit of information as far as rankings, right? And perception and all those kind of things. So
let's hear it.
So I went back to 2022, last year's class, and I said, all right, let's look at what Cyrus Moss and Nigel Lee Kelly and Jahlil Skinner and Trevante said. What happened to them when they picked, after they picked Miami? Is the perception accurate? Because the perception is all these guys, once they pick Miami, they slip in the rankings. Well, guess what? I think they're right. Okay, Andrew, Cyrus Moss. All right. And remember, all of these guys get ranked at different points in their career. Not all of them are ranked right away as a freshman, okay, or a sophomore. Some of them get discovered their junior year. So where they start off in the, you know, the number rankings and so forth, all of that depends on when they're sort of first discovered. Okay. Cyrus Moss was one of those guys who was initially ranked as a freshman back in 2019. He was 50th in the country, got a 98 rating. Okay. From 247. That was initial score. He eventually moved up to a 98.31. Okay. Which he moved up. And that was in 2020, the end of July, 2020. Right before he made his commitment to Miami, right? He played was it the Under Armour or the US Army? I forgot which game he played in.
I believe it was the US Army one.
He was a 97.42. Okay. After he made the commitment, he made a slight jump the next time the rankings came out to a 97.43. But in the end, the final composite rankings, he slipped 0.33 and dropped 8 spots from 63rd to 70th in the 247 sports composite. Now, I'm not going to go through the math the way I did before with all these other guys. I'm just going to give you the facts so you understand how I got to these conclusions. Okay. Nigel Lee Kelly, right? Mario comes in, able to convince him late to come to Miami. Originally was probably going to go to Oregon when Mario was there. After he commits to Miami, drops 5 spots from 84th to 89th. Jahlil Skinner flips from Alabama to Miami, right? He drops 4 spots from 98th to 102nd after flipping to Miami. Let's see here. Trevante Citizen, he was sort of a surprise pickup for Miami. Okay. He drops 1 spot after committing to Miami. Okay. Mm-hmm. Kamari Rogers, he was a kid who actually committed early, right? June 19, 2021, which is, you know, several months before his senior year, has the injury. He dropped from 61st, okay, before he committed to Miami, all the way to 118th. By the time he signed with Miami. Okay. Let's see here. Chris Graves, Fort Myers Bishop Vero. He's a kid who actually improved. Okay. He dropped after initially committing to Miami from 291st to 313th, but ended up 159th. And that's because I think Florida and a bunch of other schools were trying to get him right from Miami.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, here we go. Wesley Besainte. Okay. A guy who everybody kind of knew was going to stay in state and go to Miami, Florida State, or Florida. Rose initially from 196 to 169 after committing to Miami, ended up slipping back to 186 in the final rankings. Ja'Kari Brown, the quarterback from Georgia, he committed to Miami in March of last year, 2021, way before the start of his senior year. He kept falling after he committed to Miami. All right. So I hope that gives you a little bit of perspective. Is it right? Yep. Is the perception that Miami kids slip? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems that way. Whether it's a conscious thing for, you know, with SEC bias and these big fan bases and subscriptions and stuff like that, possibly. Could it also just be kind of, you know, if you see a kid's committed to Alabama, you just assume he's going to be, you know, that 5-star, one of the top kids in the country. Versus if he's committed to Miami, especially over the last decade or so, you just assume he's not, you know, possibly as good as someone that's going to Bama. And maybe that kind of subconsciously has them drop their ranking. I'm not sure. It could be either of those. But yeah, definitely, you know, seems like there's some sort of a pattern there.
Yeah. So this didn't start with Jaden Wayne. And I will say this, and people need to make this distinction. Look, we use 247 Sports Composite because that was the industry standard. I mean, we've been using that at The Athletic now for several years because On3 didn't even exist. Their composite wasn't around. But essentially, the whole idea is you divide it by the 4 major publications, the 4, you know, recruiting services and you come up with an average, right? Which I think most of us can live with.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, 247, you know, while everybody can sit there and yell at them for this thing, the reality is, you know, Rivals and other sites, the reason they drop kids is why sometimes in the composite, you know, you know, the average is lower. It's not just 247.
Jaden Wynn's a good example of that. I mean, they have him as, I think, top 35 in the country, and On3 having him at his 93rd is what dropped him all the way down. Like I said, a kid like Jaden Rashada too. He's, I think, 40. Let me see. He's 45th in the composite. But 247 is a top 30 kid in the country. Which would be a 5-star in their final rankings. So I think, you know, obviously it definitely opens up to criticism when you do include those other rankings. I think that's part of it. But it's kind of more than meets the eye there, just because, you know, one site can kind of throw off your whole composite and really shake things up there.
Yeah. And look, in the end, here's what I'll tell fans. I'm an old school guy. Mm-hmm. I look at it as you're either a top 100 player or you're not.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talent around the country. There's a lot of different things that affect these rankings. If you're a legitimate, if you're somewhere near the top 100, you're legitimately one of the top 100 players in the country.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter where you ranked in that list.
You're splitting hairs at that point, especially among different positions and stuff like that. And that's where I think some of that bias, where, you know, if they see a kid's committed to Alabama, where there's conscious, you know, consciously or subconsciously, you know, they may think he's better than a kid that's committed to Miami, just because you see where the programs have been over the last, you know, 10, 15 right. years.
Right. But I would say, you know, instead of getting been all out of shape over this stuff, just look at it as, hey, this kid's considered one of the best 100 players in the country. That means more than likely than not, he's legit. Like, there's no faking it there. You know, when you get into the 300s, the 400, to me at that point, it's kind of like, who cares? Like, you got to get the kid into school and develop him. There's only about 100, 150 kids every year in my mind who are really special elite athletes. That's the average. And I've spent a lot of time studying this, Andrew. I mean, you go year to year to year. You see who the busts are. You see who the guys that usually make it. Every now and then you'll have, you know, a 2-star or 3-star kid really rise above the ranking and be special. But the reality is, the best players in the country year in and year out are those top 100, top 150 players in each recruiting class most of the time.
Definitely. And I think, you know, a lot of it is, especially with this staff now, is I kind of, you know, try to say, hey, you know, Mario and this staff know what they're doing more than, you know, any of these recruiting sites, let alone, you know, more than most of these coaching staffs around the country. So I think at some point I just kind of, you know, trust their evaluations and stuff like that more than anything, that, hey, you know, if they want this kid that bad, you know, he's got to be good. Don't necessarily feel the same way about some of the previous staffs, but especially with Mario and the staff he's put together, and you know, I feel like he's a really good evaluator. So especially if it's, you know, a top 100 kid, or even some of those kids outside of the top 100, you know, I really trust the staff with their evaluations, and think that if they want him that badly, it's definitely a kid that's, you know, got some potential to be great.
Andrew, Miami, as we mentioned, you know, today we're expecting to get Raul Aguirre, the 4-star linebacker out of Georgia. I think they're up to 13 commitments with him, if I'm not mistaken. I got to go back and look at the list. It's just every day it feels like it's, you know, they're adding somebody else. Let's talk about the future, the rest of this class and the summer, because there's going to be more announcements, you know, from several kids. I know Janelle Aguero, the 5-star safety out of Massachusetts. I think he's announcing the 23rd. So is Malik Bryant, the 4-star linebacker out of Orlando Jones. Peyton Kirkland, I think, is also announcing on the 23rd from Orlando Dr. Phillips. You got Jaden Bonsu from Jersey City, New Jersey, the 4-star safety. I think he's announcing on the 20th. And then you have a bunch of other kids that I want to throw out there. Samson Okunlolo, the 5-star offensive tackle. Olaus Alinen, the 4-star offensive tackle from Connecticut. You got Jordan Hall, 4-star defensive tackle out of Jacksonville. Reuben Bain here from Miami Central, the 4-star defensive lineman. Damari Brown, the 4-star cornerback. And then, of course, Andy Jean, who you already mentioned, the 4-star receiver out of Miami Northwestern. Who do you think Miami adds? And look, I'm hearing a lot of the same stuff you are, but who do you think Miami adds here before we get to the football season?
I think obviously starting today with Raul, I think, you know, they go ahead and get a top 10 linebacker on board today. Mm-hmm. And basically a head-to-head matchup with Bama. I know he's a kid that Alabama really wanted. And I think, you know, we'll find out in a couple hours, but it seems like Miami's in good position there. I think Samson Akinola is another one that, you know, may end up pulling the trigger, you know, sooner than people expect. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe in the next week or two, he's on board in this class. I think if he does go through and commit shortly, you know, it will be to Miami. I feel like they feel like they've put themselves in the best position there, which would give them two of the top three offensive tackles in the country, which is incredible. Would definitely set themselves up well going forward. I know Jaden Bonsu on the 20th, he'd probably be next, you know, one of the top safeties in the country. You watch his film and he's just, you know, he's a missile. He's, you know, a kid that's built almost like a linebacker already. Just flies around out there as a big hitter, has speed, range. I think he'd be, you know, another great get on the 20th. Feels like they're pretty, you know, feel like they're set there. And then that next week you have, you know, a whole bunch of commitments, like you said. You know, Malik Bryant, Aguero, some of these other guys. And then I feel like Aguero, I'm not sure on. I feel like there's definitely a, you know, a couple schools that are in there with him.
Yeah, Georgia, I think was what a lot of people were thinking with him. But, you know, I know I spoke to him at the spring game when he was down here, and I know he loves the coaching staff. So it's kind of like we'll see with him. He'll be a mystery one on July 23rd.
Exactly. Yeah, he's made it down here a couple times. And then offensive line is going to be interesting. It seems like they have, you know, a good problem to have with a lot of top guys wanting in. And, you know, you can only take so many offensive linemen in one class. You already have, you know, Francis Maligo on board. You have Antonio Tripp on board. You have Frankie Tinalau on board. So it's going to be interesting if, you know, Samson Akinola, you know, commits soon. Then you have Peyton Kirkland on the 23rd. I know Kinsler, the recent UF commit, is committing, you know, at the end of the month. And then you still have some guys like Monroe Freeling and Alice Allen. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that offensive line class, just because you have, you know, seven or eight really good guys that all, you know, I feel like Miami's in good shape with. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who gets in, who maybe gets left out. Either way, I think they feel like they're in a really good spot with that class, with Francis Maligoa. And then, you know, I think they feel good about adding Samson Akinola over the next couple of weeks. You know, I think they're pretty set there with possibly having the best offense line class in the country. And then I think, you know, receiver, which we touched on earlier, is another interesting spot. You have Hakeem Williams, who they definitely got back in it for. I'm not sure, you know, he doesn't seem to really have a timetable set.
Right.
I think receiver is one that that might be a little bit more drawn out. But definitely over the next, you know, maybe 3 weeks by the end of July, it seems like they could have, you know, 18, maybe 20 guys on board already.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely going to be a fun couple of weeks to watch them. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the month, they're, you know, in the top three, you know, in the rankings overall.
Yeah. Let's just go one by one. We'll say yes or no. Samson Akinola in the class or not?
Yes.
Okay. I agree. I think he's in the class. Jonel Aguero, 5-star safety.
I'm going to lean no.
I'm going to say yes. I think they get him as part of a combination with him and Jaden Bonsu. 4-star linebacker Malik Bryant.
Yes.
I agree. I think him and Peyton Kirkland might be a combination deal there. Olau Salinen, the 4-star offensive tackle from Finland.
I'm going to say no.
I agree. I think he goes to Alabama. This Jordan Hall kid, the 4-star defensive tackle from Jacksonville West Side, I don't think he's going to be in the class, but what are your long-term thoughts on him?
I'm going to say no as well. I think defensive tackle is kind of one of the spots that I'm not really sure what, you know, Miami is looking at. It doesn't seem like they have too many guys on their board at that position.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see kind of where they turn there. But yeah, I'm going to lean no on him as well.
Yeah. Reuben Bain, out of Miami Central, I'm going to say yes. He's got too many connections here at Miami.
I'm going to say yes as well. The only thing I'm not sure is if there's any holdup there with hiring his former coach. I know at one point the NCAA kind of tried to put in the rule where you can't take a kid that year after.
Right.
So with recently hiring Roland Smith, I'm not sure you know, if that impacts it off, that's maybe why his process has been drawn out. But I think at the end of the day, if that gets cleared up, he's in.
All right. Here's one of your SFE guys, Damari Brown, 4-star cornerback out of American Heritage.
I'm going to say yes. I think it once Miami weathered the storm of him visiting Clemson, seemed like it was just kind of down to them and Alabama. Alabama already has two of the top three corners in the class, possibly the top three corners in the class if they end up getting Cormani McClain. So I think Damari ends up at UM. Plus, I mean, he's a legacy. His dad played here. I think he's a kid that ends up here.
All right. Jaden Bonsu, I say yes.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Peyton Kirkland, I say yes.
I'm going to say yes as well.
All right. And Andy Jean from Miami Northwestern.
I'm going to say yes on him. I think with Jaylen Brown leaving, I think they want to take, you know, four receivers in this class. I think he's in that four. Mm-hmm. I think they went out and keep him home there.
Okay. I'm going to say no. I don't think he stays. I think he goes to another school. He was committed to Miami, and for whatever reason, I don't know why. I think maybe Florida gets a victory here in the Andy Jean front. And then Hakeem Williams.
Oh, that's
a really tough one, isn't it?
if you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I'd have told you no way. Uh-huh. After the last two or three weeks and just the progress that they've made there, I'm going to say yes right now. I think a big tell will be at the end of the month. Miami's having a recruiting barbecue.
Right.
I think if they get him to show up that weekend, I think he's in. I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to agree with you there too. I think he's going to ultimately see what this offense and this team does this year. And I think a lot of these local kids are going to be impressed with what Miami does this year. And I think that's going to change their outlook on the coaching staff and whether or not they want to be a part of this. So,
yeah, I agree. And I think that can definitely, you know, kind of springboard them into just an insane 24 class with the talent that's down here.
Yeah. Andrew, let's get to one final subject here before we wrap up, and that's realignment. And, you know, obviously, you know, a couple of weeks ago when UCLA and USC announced they were leaving the Pac-12 for the Big Ten, a lot of people lost their minds. Oh, my God, this is going to be the first domino of leading to super conferences. And the last time I did a podcast with Carlos Ledo, we talked about, you know, how this might affect Miami. And the reality is, I've kind of calmed down a little bit with my level of excitement over this because I really do think based on the TV contracts, okay, the fact that the Miami's, you know, the ACC's grant of rights runs through 2036, the fact that, you know, Notre Dame is probably the biggest domino and that has to fall first, I think, before the things happen. I'm kind of, after talking to some people in the league, you know, people who run athletic programs in the ACC, I'm of the opinion that while people are certainly lining themselves up to join a super conference and get the big payday and, you know, take care of their programs 10 years from now instead of being way behind the others, I don't think it's anything as imminent. I guess my question to you is, how do you think this affects recruiting? Do you think any of these guys, and you guys went out to USC and UCLA, I was with you on those trips. Mm-hmm. How much do you think this maybe affects recruiting and the Pac-12 and the ACC and the Big 12 conferences that aren't part of this super conference?
Honestly, I don't think it's going to affect recruiting too much now. If things continue to move and you know, teams shift around going forward, then it might. But I think, you know, I kind of feel the same way. I think we're a little bit further away from that than some people thought originally. At the moment, I don't think it's, you know, going to impact recruiting too much. I haven't really heard any schools, you know, whether it was while we were at USC or, you know, down here at Miami or anything like that, really starting to, you know, mention that in their recruiting pitches. And when it comes to you, regarding that, I'm, you know, I've calmed down a lot with that too. Again, just, you know, thinking it doesn't come as soon as people think. And also just realizing, like, it's Miami. Like, it's one of, you know, whether they've been good or not for the last 20 years, it's still one of the biggest, most recognizable brands in the country. If, you know, three or four teams get pulled from the ACC into, you know, the Big Ten or the SEC or get split, Miami is going to be one of those teams. They're not someone that's going to be left on the outside looking in. So I think, you know, that's kind of my view on it.
Right. If Miami was more of a position to get screwed, right?
Yeah.
That would be more of your concern. Mm-hmm.
I think if you're more of like a Virginia Tech, NC State, that's the kind of school that may have to be more concerned about it. Mm-hmm. Because you're kind of on the border of, hey, you know, I might get left out of this, you know, one of these super conferences. What happens then? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Miami's in good shape. You know, it's probably them, FSU, Clemson, and maybe UNC or Virginia Tech that get pulled from the ACC when, you know, when everything does happen down the line. So I think regardless, just, you know, with the brand that they've built and who Miami is, you know, I think they're going to be fine going forward regardless.
Have any of the kids voiced concerns to you? Have any of them asked, hey, what's going on with real? Have you heard any of that sort of talk from the actual players, or they're not even paying attention to it?
Probably? Not at all. I don't think most of them are even paying attention to that. to be honest with you. I haven't heard much talk from that really impacting recruiting at all lately.
Yeah. Andrew, it was fun doing this podcast with you. You were great. Phenomenal. Again, I hope to bring you back on to do more recruiting conversation, because I know you're very tapped into this and know what's going on. I want our listeners to be able to follow you on Twitter. You mind sharing your Twitter address?
Yeah. So it's just Andrew_Ferrelli. That's AndrewFerrelli.
Yeah.
Give me a follow if you want. Tweet a lot about sports, some funny things here and there, maybe.
Yep. And now hopefully we'll bring you on more often to talk recruiting and get you in here as part of my rotation of co-hosts, because I think, you know, you have a very unique perspective being around these guys, being around involved with SFE, and obviously know a lot of what you're talking about. So I appreciate you coming on and look forward to our next time together.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on. It was a pleasure doing this. And yeah, definitely anytime you want, let me know. Should be a fun next few weeks as this class continues to pan out.
Absolutely. Andrew, thanks for coming on, man. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Have a good one.